Okay, let's start. Welcome, everyone. Nice to see so many of you here. The next session is called Windows Black Belt Troubleshooting. We'll talk about Windows 8.1. I hope we can get some kind of a competition against the folks next door. They're making a great noise, so hopefully we will too. Yeah, I got better. So, my name is Sami Laiho. I'm from Finland. I've been presenting on BitLocker on Monday, and today we're talking about troubleshooting. I'm an MVP in the Windows OS. Been such for the last 4 years. I'm also a part of the Microsoft STEP group. And I work as a senior technical fellow for the biggest training company in Finland called Sovelto, and also on the same title for my own company called adminice.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, please do. That's @SamiLaiho. Easy Finnish name. And there's also a link for my free newsletter if you want to get tips and tricks on troubleshooting. You get some examples during this session as well. I got this question yesterday, so I have to answer it now. At least two or three people asking me that they were on my BitLocker session, and then afterwards they went to Mark Rusinovich's session and figured out that he's a technical fellow, and he's quite a lot older than I am, so how could he be a technical fellow and I be a senior technical fellow? So the difference between a senior technical fellow is actually, there's one senior technical fellow in Microsoft as well called Dave Cutler, and he's responsible for the Windows kernel. So you have to be really, really deep into the Windows OS to be given this title. So for example, for me, it took years and years to get it. You can actually find it in the Windows OS because you have to have your personal keyboard layout to be called a senior technical fellow. It's easier to understand what I'm talking about with these front row Finns here when you just change to that. Because I'm not a native English speaker, I always start my presentations with a few words of my own country. I used to talk about Nokia all the time, but something happened to Nokia, so that's kind of out of the picture now. I've been doing this troubleshooting for a long time, and this is a picture of me in 2001 doing an XP deep dive at that time, done below the surface of Atlantic Ocean with IBMs at that time. Didn't make it. We didn't have toughbooks at that time, so. I actually took another picture because I showed that picture on Monday already. This is a picture of me during last Christmas. Always have to keep the tourists entertained, so you have to have some funny things. And as Santa Claus is from Finland, so there you go. So, who attended my session on Monday? Some? Okay, fair enough. Just to show you a few examples of why I'm having more tough time administering and troubleshooting my machines than you probably are, is the fact that when you get this administrator, and a Spanish get administrador, we get this. That's easy, it's called järjestelmävalvoja. Okay. So you actually need this something called the secure input to even type it in. So I actually have a website called www.järjestelmävalvoja.fi, but you can't get in because you don't have the letters, so. Because I've had this slide so long on my sessions, I actually did some investigation for the Nordic Infrastructure Conference in Oslo in January, and there's actually out of 107 languages that Windows supports, there's only eight who have decided to localize the actual username. Almost all localize the display name that you see. But when you have to really go and log on using the local administrator, only these few countries have decided to change it. We have a one relative language to Finnish, which is Hungarian. It's kind of easy to figure out because they're the only ones that you can have any idea. Even I don't know how to pronounce that one. It makes your UI look quite weird when you have gpedit.msc, you get this. That's an easier one, and it's kind of even a short word in Finnish, but it's ryhmäkäytäntö objektieditori, so. Yeah. Okay, fair enough. I have a few projects I'm working on. I'm known globally quite well because of a project called Vioski. Vioski is a free replacement for Steady State. I was responsible for the Windows 7 implementation with the city of Helsinki, capital of Finland, and they couldn't go through migrating to Windows 7 before they had a kiosk machine that would revert itself back to the same bits that it was before. And Microsoft took Steady State out of the picture, ending its support with Windows Vista. So I had to develop something myself, and that's what Vioski came out of. Also, I have my own company called Adminizer.com, which does a software called Adminizer. It gives you one-time admin passwords and gets you rid of all the hassle of administering local admin passwords. And then there's my blog site on the bottom. Housekeeping. After the session, I will stick around. I'll exchange business cards or email addresses for the coolest järjestelmävalvoja baseball caps with headlights. I only have about 100 of these, so the rest of you, give me your cards and get them later, but I've got about 100 here, so quickest can get it now. There we go. So what are we going to go through? We've got basics of OS troubleshooting first, just to establish a few baselines. Then we've got performance troubleshooting, network troubleshooting, and finally, unbootable machine troubleshooting. To get started, there's a few laws in Windows troubleshooting. First of all, I always teach my students that the only logic in Windows is that there is no logic. We're talking about an operating system, but that houses all 32-bit code in the SysWOV 64 folder and all 64-bit code in the System 32 folder. We're talking about an OS that has a device driver called AFD, which stands for another freaking driver. We've got an OS that actually has all boot files on the system volume and all system files on the boot volume. Why are we talking about this? We're talking about this because what I really mean is that Windows is an OS that you just have to learn by heart. As PowerShell is really cool, and in PowerShell you can guess. If to start a process, you use start process. To stop a process, you use stop process. So for a service, you can guess start service, stop service. That's because they had an empty shell with rules before they had anything. And then they started building up stuff. That's great that they didn't go with the plan B of creating a super command prompt and trying to make the old one better. That makes your usage of Windows kind of a weird thing. Just as an example, a few examples of the OS, what I mean by saying that you have to know everything by heart, I always take this, although it's a Windows 7 box running on a VM here, there's weird stuff in these Windows OS is. For example, on this computer, there's a policy stating that no other, stating what apps can run, what software can run. So you cannot run a CMD, it's restricted by a policy. I can't get by this. Actually learned this due to trying to fix a kiosk machine at an airport. What we'll do is we'll just go and start Task Manager and try these things that you often do. Now if you try to do it from here, it doesn't work. That's fine. Great. They did a good job. Okay? So it's prevented. But what if, I don't know why, but if you press the control key on your keyboard and tap new task, you actually get a command prompt. What if you get a question of what's the quickest way to kill explorer.exe? Might be taskkill.exe, might be task manager, whatever. But who would figure out that? If you right-click shutdown, there's nothing. If you press control right-click, there's nothing. But if you press control shift right-click, you actually get Exit Explorer. Yeah, they took it away, so you can't stop it anymore. Okay, but just think about it in a way that you have to actually know by heart what you're doing. That makes learning a bit more difficult, so that's just something good to know. David Solomon once said that if something is broken, run process monitor, or if in doubt, run process monitor. So that's a really good one. That's the base. That's basically the number one tool out of everything. If I would have to name one single tool for troubleshooting, it would be process monitor anyway. Use a methodology. So if you have yourself made up your own methods, like first try if it's a network problem, then try if it's a computer problem, then go if it's a user problem, if it's a profile problem. Just try to stick to something, because of most often when I miss something, it's just because I don't obey my own rules. So you should have some kind of a method on how to do troubleshooting. One important thing is know to when give up. That's why these two names are here. I think there are two stereotypes which are the biggest enemies of any help desk. And I call them Teflon Princess or a flypaper. Teflon Princess is someone who a help desk ticket will never stick to. They get those tickets, and the tickets just fly by because they're escalating everything. And then we've got the flypaper, like me, who take the help desk ticket and never give up. Give me 30 minutes more. I'll figure this out. Should we call product support services? Give me 2 hours. I'll get back to you tomorrow. We'll do it. No help. So those are both bad. You should have something in between. And always remember to document whatever you do. So as long as it's in electrical format. You might have really cool help desk systems. You might have free ones. You might not have anything at all. My family owns a clothing company, and me and my dad are administering it. And our basically only documentation that we have, for example, on a few servers that we do, is just basically an old notepad. A notepad has this old logging mode, if you know it. So you just type .log on the first row, then save your file for Loki. That's log file in Finnish. So that's my log. And from then on, whenever you open it up, it just gives you a timestamp. And then you write what you did. Next one opens, timestamp. Next one opens, timestamp. I'm not saying that's the coolest thing to do with Notepad, or that's the best way of having a help desk system. But what I'm trying to tell you is, that it's actually important that it gets written somewhere in electrical format so it can be indexed. That's the most important thing. Most common flaws in troubleshooting. First of all, people tend to think that admin can do anything, and tend to think that admin is comparable to Unix's root user, which is far off. And the most, and the second biggest misconception is that the processes would be responsible for errors, as processes kind of never can be causing any errors. Processes are sandboxes for threads. And Windows is a threaded, multi-threaded operating system, so means that all the functions are executed by threads. We're going to go through those. We have a few what you need for troubleshooting. First, what you need for troubleshooting is good error reports from your users. This is usually what you get. Now, agreed? My computer just broke. What did you do? That's the other end. And at the other end, we have the coolest screenshot I've ever had. It's an actual screenshot of a piece of paper that I got about 10 years ago, which is here. So you don't really know what you should say. Should you thank them, or should you? I call it dedication. As you can see, it's the NT4 time frame, so it's an old one. But I keep it on my wall anyway. I once had a user. Okay, let's check a few of these out. So we've got a few demos on this one. I think we'll do this on the base OS here. It's just a few pointers. First of all, people tend to think that if you have a Windows error dialog, it actually supports copy-paste. So whenever you get an error dialog, you just press Ctrl-C, shoot up your email client, and press Ctrl-V. So when people are struggling in just writing huge, long lines, then Ctrl-C, Ctrl-V. There's another one. So when people talk to you, they tend to think that you know all help messages by heart. There's only about 32,000 of those, and you know them. But you have the old NetHelp MSG, which can translate it. So help message 0 is the operation completed successfully. Help message 1, incorrect function. Whenever I do lots of on-site training for companies, so whenever I have a lab and I ask the people to do this, at least half of the students yell at me like, the lab is not working, it's saying it's an incorrect function. Yeah, it should. It's not broken. You don't have to know these, but there's a few ones you might quite easily get to remember. If you have kids that have driver's licenses, you might get out of your home and get a error message 4328, which means that they cannot use the transport because it is already in use. For those who are going to the final party of TechEd, those of you who are married and going to their party alone, you always have to remember help message 4006, which means that the replication with a So a few ones. Okay, fair enough. There's the snipping tool, which is a good one, a new one in Windows 7. You can take snips of the OS. You can draw them. Whenever I'm teaching, the probably funniest part is that you always learn something from your students, which is really cool. And I had a course about 2 years ago, and I was telling them about this snipping tool, and I said that snipping tool is quite good, but I use Nagit. And snipping tool, the only bad thing is that it cannot capture any menus. So if I'll take, wanna capture this file menu here, I have to press snip, and no, I can't. And a student of mine asked me, have you read the help file? Sure. Yeah, almost in the beginning of the help file. It actually says that if you open up snipping tool and then press escape, you can escape out of it. Go to open up, for example, a menu here and then press control print screen and get the snipping tool back on. So it obviously is possible. If that's not enough, then there's something built into Windows 7 for the first time, which is called PSR, Problem Steps Recorder. PSR can record, and it can be great for documenting as well. It can be great for doing manuals. But what it does is it actually captures everything you do. So, for example, if I start up Notepad, I can type something. I can try to edit it, format it, whatever. And everything gets captured. And the great thing is that it's only capturing pictures, not video. So the client can actually sit down for 30 minutes thinking of what the next step was to produce the problem. And it won't get any bigger, I mean the file size. You can inject comments. So add a comment, write a comment. Okay, stop record. And then you can see it here instantly, or you can just send it via email if you have an email client configured. Save the snip. So there's pictures of everything you did. plus the comments, so you can probably quite easily guess that it's used for manuals a lot. So just building quick user manuals on intranets and stuff like that. If you want to really feel it out, you can just go review the recorded steps as a slideshow, and then you can see it actually moving around slowly, like a video. Okay, a few ways to capture errors. Then what you need next is access. You need to have some kind of an access for your computer. So I, of course, use a lot of remote desktop and remote desktop connection manager, RDC man, especially for servers. I do remote desktoping a lot. But the thing is that those are only valid for online debugging, which happens after logon. You can't really troubleshoot any startup issues. You cannot troubleshoot any blue screens. You cannot troubleshoot BIOS settings, UEFI settings. So it's not there yet. I use TeamViewer a lot, German piece of software, which is really cool. I use it for two things. I use it for remote accessing my computers, and I use it for security auditing. Whenever I go to a company's site, they call me and ask me, could you do a security audit? I always tell them that first, you try that you can and are able to block TeamViewer. When you're there, then it's time for me to step in. It goes through firewalls. It doesn't need admin rights to install it or run it. So it's a really good test for security as well. I usually always use hardware-based troubleshooting tools. I tend to order all of my machines with vPro, although I'm stuck with Intel, and I'm stuck with, in Europe, about 100 euros more or bigger price. I always use stuff that has vPro. If you want to get a look at it, you can go to realvnc.com and see they have a real, they have a product for using it, but they also have good specs on what kind of hardware do you need. And I've also written a blog about how to enable it quick and dirty, just to get started. Or you can build your own help desk kit. In Finland, we have this saying that to build anything that's bulletproof and usable and gets the respect of administrators, you always have to have two things, which is duct tape and cable ties. So this is my own help desk kit, which I use. It's a simple one. It has an KVM, an internet-based KVM, one crossover cable, a wireless bridge, which is taped and cable tied in, let's say. So you can take it to any computer, plug in the cords, and you got access on the hardware level. So that's, again, my almost free thingy, but vPro is really cool. Always be creative. This is an actual screenshot from my godson, Jani. I was troubleshooting about 2 weeks ago. I was troubleshooting his unbootable Windows machine with WhatsApp. So be creative. Whatever you can use to get to see what the customer is seeing, that's what you would really need. We actually had this company party that we had to do an invention, and we did took a small mini PC and a pair of glasses and a Logitech webcam and put it on top of the eyeglasses so that you could have like a help desk kit that you can wear and you can actually see what your customers see. It's like, I know it's a joke, but it's kind of what you're looking for. You could tell them that you take the cable on the left. No, 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 no. Next one, one right, one, that one. Take that one, yes. So be creative. I've got vPro as an example. So now we're getting into really, really dangerous waters because we're using TeamViewer to establish a connection from here to Finland. And then I'm going to remote control a computer at our family's clothing factory. So you should never do online demos, but I still did it. Okay, fair enough. Here we have a VNC Viewer Plus, which can also do both the original VNC server, and then also, as you can see here, there's something called Intel AMT KVM. So if you press connect and authenticate, wow, it's slow. We should see a Windows 8 machine. No, the screen is black. Yeah, here we go. So there's a Windows machine, and I've actually destroyed this machine kind of pre-hand. It's a production machine, so luckily you can see that the clock is 20 to midnight in Finland, so they're not working right now. What I'll actually do is I'll just go ahead and reboot this machine. I could reboot the machine from here, or I can go up and just use the controls to do a hardware-based reboot. So here we can control the actual power switches. So we could just go ahead and do a reset. Or let's go here. So restart. Restart anyway. And usually what happens is it starts installing updates, but luckily not this time. So here you can see you got BIOS level access, or UEFI in this case. We got a Windows booting up. I actually tweaked the registry so that I disabled the ACPI service totally. So when it has no power management, it actually cannot reboot. So it's just standing there for a while and then blue screening out. But what we are going after here is that actually we can do all troubleshooting. So all workstations can be troubleshoot this way. What we could do, we could also say that power off, or let's say reset, because it's going to crash anyway, and just say boot to BIOS. So now we have the blue screen, and we can actually see it. Although Windows 8 doesn't have the original blue screen, it only has this smiley here. Let's boot to BIOS, reset. I could reinstall it. We've got MDT, so I could just go and boot it to the network, for example, with F12. Just choose network booting and reinstall it totally. So whatever you prefer, you still need access. And the first thing was physical access to the computer or logical access with remote desktop, TeamViewer, and such. And then we're going to OS access. So to get OS access, you first of all need to get into the computer. We're going to do basically the same kind of a demo I did on the BitLocker session, but I'm going to do it the nice way this time. So what I'll do is I'll just change the admin password, and probably many of you have tried something like this out, so I'm going to actually shut this down. Don't need that anymore. It's taking up resources, so let's go for another machine. Here we go. Full screen. Connect. And what I'll do is I'll just mess up my passwords so I don't know how to get into the computer. Or we could just actually reboot the machine anyway. I already showed the guys who were on Monday on my session that this is kind of funny, because it's not that easy to get email through when you come up with this. You thought it was a good joke to have this kind of a user ID, but I needed to have a Windows 8 user ID for demo purposes, so I came up with this firstname.lastname@live.fi. But you can probably figure out how hard it is. As I tell anyone my email address, they're sending me an SMS like, why isn't sami.lihu@live.fi answering to my email? Like, no, it's F-I-R-S-T-N-A. Super hard to get any email. Okay, so, oh, sorry, I was going to crack this, so let's just restart it. And I'll restart it with the Windows 8.1 installation media as soon as it's restarting. So there's an ISO file of Windows 8.1 installation DVD attached to this VM, so it'll just boot up. You can do this, change your user locals to what you want. You see, finish with Sami. It's proof for you. Or you can just press Shift F10 and find the OS drive. So let's try C. There's Windows. Sure, Windows System 32, and then do two copy commands. So copy sethe.exe to sethe.back. So let's do a backup of it. And then we'll do a copy cmd.exe on top of sethe.exe. There's lots of ways of doing this, and you can do it through registry, looking more cool, but I'd still say this is the quick and dirty one. Exit, reboot. Not booting from the ISO. And here we go. So now that you cannot get in, now that you can't get in, you just brute force yourself in by banging on the shift key as hard as you can. Here we go. And luckily we are running system, so we've got full access. So let's do net user administrator because it's disabled. It's disabled as a security measure, you know. Active, yes. Thank you. Net user administrator. And set the password. Query one. Here we go. Exit out of that. Exit out of that. And let's go back. And here we go. Administrator. Query one. Welcome. Okay. Now to get that one out of your system after you've done it, you will have to copy it back, and it's not as easy because it's a protected file. So what you'll have to do is change the font. I'm actually wondering if you're laughing about the joke I was going to make. If you've seen my videos, you might have. Because this is a black belt session. What we'll do now is actually we use something that my friends and me call the ninja mode. If you really know your Windows, you don't need to see anything. No, we won't. Let's just make it easier for you. Okay, fair enough. And I actually have this here, so if we'll try it out, let's go to Windows, System 32, and let's try this out first. So copy sethc back to sethc.exe. Oh, sorry, that works, but this one won't. Yes, and access denied. Fair enough, there's many things preventing you from doing it. So first of all, we'll go and take ownership of the file. Here we go, it's now mine. Then we'll use cacles to set the user rights on it. Here we go. And finally, we need to take the system attributes out of it. So here we go. Bang. And let's try it again. That's F7, by the way, if you don't know it. You probably do. Yes. OK. One file's copied. Now you're back, and your computer is working as it was before the crack. All right. So that's access. Then you need privileges. There's actually, I know because I can see you in the audience that you were talking on the speaker idol about this, so I know it was you, wasn't it? Yes. Talking about this one. There's three user IDs or user accounts that are used by services in Windows. There's local service, network service, and system. Local service and network service are referred to as he, because he can't really do anything. And then we have Mrs. System, referred to as she, because she can actually do whatever she wants. So Mrs. System can do stuff that Mr. Administrator cannot, although he believes he can, but the actual power. So she has more user privileges than administrator. She doesn't need to worry about any policies. She can see stuff admin can't. She can stop processes admin can't. She has, and the most important one is the last one, she has a higher integrity level than administrator. Okay, let's do a demo on that one. So first of all, we've got a normal administrator here. This is actually an administrator running without UAC. So let's try it again. So let's do CMD, but you press Control Shift Enter instead of Enter. So you get UAC and yes. And this one is the normal admin. So if we check out his access token with the command whoami/all, you can see that he's got quite a lot of different privileges. And he has a mandatory label of high mandatory level. But he can't really do that much. So for example, system volume information, access is denied. Regedit. Hockey local machine, SAM, security. What if you would like to see your computer account's password? No way of seeing it here, okay? Then what we'll do is we'll use PSExec, SID, SID actually states for, is for system interactive and don't wait. So, oh, sorry, .exing. And here we go. So whoami/all. We've got more privileges than an admin. The list is longer. We can go wherever we want. These open. You can open up Regedit and open up, for example, machine accounts, secrets, which is below the security hive. Okay. You can kill processes, meaning malware, a lot easier with system account than admin. You can see stuff. We'll see more of these later on. But those are like basics that you have to know. You have to have enough power. After you get access, you have to have enough power. And then the next important thing, what you need, is you need to have the correct object. So you should be troubleshooting threads instead of processes. Processes can't really do anything if you're using Task Manager, you're losing. Meaning that Task Manager is still, although a lot better nowadays, it's still missing a lot. And the most important thing is that it's totally missing the concept of threads. Although Windows executes function in threads. So let's just take a few examples. For example, a search engine. Let's say that you might have a situation that your Explorer exe is somehow hanging. Never happens in Windows, but let's just pretend. So we've got Explorer exe here. And by default, you will only see that Explorer exe is running. But I've actually changed the columns a bit. So I select columns and chose to see the number of threads. If someone would tell you that in Windows Vista, Explorer exe never hanged, you might be laughing, but it's true. It wasn't Explorer exe that was hanging, it was a thread inside it. Usually it was something called shellwappy.dll, which is responsible for indexing. So there's 76 programs running on Explorer right now. So I'll tell you, this is really, really tough for me, but we are going to use Bing. I wasn't sure if I remembered the address, I was going to Google it. But okay. Let's say Explorer exe is hanging. And I'll bet you the answer is there. You just have to go through 89,200 different websites. It's not about not finding it, it's about the noise. That's the bad thing that you have to fight against. So, how to get rid of noise? You change tools, you start controlling the real objects. You change to Process Explorer. Which is somewhere here. And let's take the same one. So we've got Explorer exe here. Somewhere. Here we go. Right click, properties, and go to threads. You're seeing something here that it says it's loading symbols. That's because I've injected a few things into Process Explorer just to make it a bit more accurate, but we'll talk about that later on. So it says that actually most of the CPU cycles are going to shcore.dll. So just as an example, shcore.dll used as a search word 48 results. Is it there or not? I'm not sure, but you probably get the idea. So to get rid of noise, what you start to have to do is you have to make your searches more accurate. You have to make sure that the results are from people that actually know at least something about what they're doing. I always remember sometimes when I was struggling with a word, Windows Word or Microsoft Word, like a language checking option for Finnish, and I couldn't get it working. And I got an error every single time I tried to get a misspelled word corrected. And I went to the eventid.net, I think, at that time, and I had an event ID. I put it on eventid.net, and it told me instantly that the accepted solution was to reinstall IE. And you instantly know that someone has just, by luck, at the same time of uninstalling and reinstalling IE, gotten it fixed. So that's always the problem. There's no one checking on your solutions. There's better websites that do have some kind of a moderation. But most of the time, you'd have no idea if it's true or not. Then you have to test it. And if you're talking about processes, you're talking to millions and millions of people using Google. Ooh, Bing. And if you're talking about threads, you're talking to a lot smaller audience. You're getting more accurate, better responses. Then you need to get the tools. So what you saw there were actually Process Explorer, and Process Explorer was picking up something called symbols. So it can start to translate what it sees here and translate it to even more exact function names. It's starting to do here. It's starting to change the numbers to words like here. If you want to do that, you have to install debugging tools, although you would never do any debugging. You just install it as a support option for Process Explorer. And then you need to insert that system-wide variable to your Windows OS. That was actually the demonstration already, but a few case examples still. So here you can see there's a virtual machine in a customer's VDI environment. They actually had 1,000 virtual machines running on a VDI, and every single computer or a virtual machine without running anything on Windows 7 was stuck at this, 65% of CPU used. If you use Task Manager, you can see that their system taking up about 40% of the CPU, and that's it. And with a simple change from Task Manager to Process Explorer, you'll see that actually a thread inside of the process called system, called floppydisk.sys, is causing all the bottlenecks. It was the weirdest one I've probably ever seen, but what actually had happened was that the guy who cloned the VDI machine had been playing out with BitLocker and had a virtual floppy injected in the virtual machine. And then he took a copy of that one and cloned it 1,000 times. So every single VDI machine was trying to read a floppy that was pointing to a file which didn't exist. But a really, really easy one. Process Explorer, floppy disk, floppy settings, done, thanks. With Task Manager, there's no way of doing it. Then you need access to files. And this is when integrity levels come into play. So Windows Vista introduced a concept of mandatory integrity control, integrity levels, which is the biggest change in Windows security since ages. Although not many people have even heard about it. If we would take a raise of hands on who knows about mandatory integrity levels. So first of all, everybody raise their hands who are not going to raise their hands. Okay? Who knows what mandatory integrity levels are? A few. Good. So Windows Vista introduced something to make it possible to have different levels for software. So you could have an insecure software like IE, you could have a more secure software like Windows Word or whatever. So yeah, that's one to choose. What happens is that every process has an integrity level. By default, you can control four levels. There's low, medium, high system. And then you have resources like files and register keys, which have an integrity level of low, medium, high system. If your process is running an integrity level lower than the resource, you cannot write to it. Although you would have full control access to the file, you couldn't write to it. So if you've ever been in a situation in like Windows 7, Windows 8, that you have a file, you know by everything that you've learned before that you should be able to delete it. You press delete, and it says access denied. Then you go say, take ownership, still access denied. Give yourself full control, still access denied. Then it's because of your integrity levels, because those are stronger than NTFS. So NTFS full control will never bypass if you have a lower integrity level. This will also explain a few things you might have been wondering, at least I was, when I was introduced to Windows Vista. So for example, my user profile has application data folder, which has these, local, local low, and roaming. Everything that goes to roaming roams with the roaming profile, if you have one. Everything that goes to local or local low stays on the computer, even if you have a roaming profile. But what's the difference between local and local low? Now you know. It's the integrity level. Local is set at the integrity level of medium, making it more secure than local low, which is a trash bin. And IE, for example, with IE temporary internet files, can access the local low one because it's running integrity level of low. You can see this. Now, let's think about it. If you open up a program and your level, let's see here, this is running an administrator. What if you're running a command prompt without UAC? Who am I? /all. We can see that my integrity level actually now is medium. If I use elevation, you can see it by this administrator word here. Who am I? /all shows that I've got high. Only when I run with the system can I get up to the level that can actually access all files in Windows, because now you have a mandatory label, system mandatory level. That's your mandatory, that's your integrity level now. If you start up something, it inherits your level. So what about IE? If you've ever heard, if you remember this, this is almost 10 years ago, but when Vista was announced, they said that Internet Explorer has something called the protected mode, but it's more secure on Vista than it's on XP in IE 7. Why? That's also because of this. In XP, it was just pieces of software trying to protect you in XP, but in Vista, IE, for the first time, if you're using protected mode, was run with the low integrity level, making it impossible for IE to save files to your profile, for example. Now you might think that I'm lying, because you know that you can take IE, open up a PDF, and save it into your documents folder. But that's because IE has two processes. So if you take Process Explorer and find IE, you can see it here. There's the IE that you use for browsing, keeping it secure, running at the integrity level of low. And then it has a base process, which is actually running on the medium level. And this one is the one that saves your files to your documents, because this one would never be able to do it. It's a really, really big thing in Windows security. Still, it hasn't been written about almost anywhere. Question, go ahead. Trusted installer. The question was, what about trusted installer? Probably every one of you has seen trusted installer. Trusted installer is a dude living in Windows who can do whatever. Trusted installer has even a higher level. There's two levels that you cannot see, or, well, you can see them, but that you cannot manage them. In real life, they're are the four levels that you can see and manage. But there's actually one untrusted and trusted installer levels, like one below the low and one above the system one. Trusted installer is a service. You can see him owning or her owning most of the Windows operating system files, in program files, for example. So if you try to delete something from there, it'll say access denied, and you can see that it's owned by trusted installer. What's that trusted installer that you see in the ACL? You see it there on permissions. What is that? That's actually just a service. So since Windows Vista, the other and probably the second biggest change in the whole Windows was that it was the first time that services actually had SIDs. So for example, trusted installer has a SID. And in Windows, when you have a SID, you become a security principal, which means that you can be given permissions to or taken off. So you will see that service in the permissions. That's her name that you see there. If you try to figure this out, you have to be really careful. I don't know if you've been reading the news lately, but actually this is a demo that I've done before, and I probably don't have it here. I do luckily have it here. So there are services in Windows, but this one has a really, really weird kind of a security by obscurity. So you have to get the real number here. There's a service called NSA. Secret Listener. Luckily, it's inactive on my machine. Due to recent news, I've decided to disable it. No, actually, the thing is that this one doesn't check if the service actually exists, but it counts the SID on the fly. So you could type in anything. So there's a browser service, but there might be a Bowser service. Now, this one is not a joke. You have to be really, really careful. What I told you in the beginning, remember, there is no logic in Windows, but you have to learn everything by heart. And this is a good example of it, because if you're trying to troubleshoot a file browsing service for server message protocol, SMB protocol, you actually go here and you find the service browser, and then you try to put the parameters in that the KP article says to disable it. It's actually wrong because it's Bowser. They just typed it in correctly. So Bowser really exists. So that's not a joke. This one was a joke, but this is not. You have to be really, really careful. Got to know your stuff. If you want to access a file that you cannot access, otherwise you'll go iCackles, set integrity level. That's the only only application that can set integrity levels. You have to lower the integrity level of the file you're trying to destroy, for example, and then destroy it. Now you know, iCackles, it's not iCackles because of iPad, iPod, and iPhone. It's iCackles because of the word integrity. So it's the only one that can access integrity levels. What you need next, you need tools. Already built in, msconfig, perfmon has a few tools built into it, so perfmon/res and perfmon/rel. Resource monitor and reliability monitor. You've probably seen these. These were introduced in Windows Vista already. You can find them all around the graphical user interface, but if you're talking to someone from Finland, it's not that easy to find in the Finnish UI, so that's why I use these. So perfmon/res, which is the resource monitor. Perfect, for example, trying to find memory bottlenecks. You know that Windows doesn't need to have free memory. It needs to have available memory, because free memory is taken by Superfetch. I got an SSD on this machine, so Superfetch is not that aggressive, so it's not taking that much. I've got available memory. But the other thing is that you can't just check about available memory. You have to check about hardware faults. You have to check about hard faults, meaning there are page faults. Windows has KP articles. Microsoft has KP articles that state that you cannot have page faults for more than 5 per second. But that's wrong, because you have to have, you cannot have more than 5 hard page faults. Page faults are divided into 2. Soft page faults are when a process doesn't have a memory page in its working set, but it resides in the memory. So it's not a bottleneck because it's fast. And a hard page fault is when the memory page needs to be read from the disk, which makes it a bottleneck. If you've got a single line, a single process causing huge amounts of hard faults, that's usually just a lousy process. You don't have to buy more memory. But if you've got many lines, having hard page faults means that many files cannot access files from the memory, so you probably need to upgrade your memory. Resource monitor is like something between task manager and process explorer. And the reliability monitor is perfect. I've been trying to make my computer as lousy as possible for the previous few weeks to make this look horrible. And boy, did I do a good job. Because it looks horrible. The line here is from 0 to 10, and it shows how reliable your machine has been. It's perfect when you have a customer saying that my computer sucks and my friend's is perfect. You can actually go and check which one is working better. And it states whenever something hangs by day, so if they tell you that their computer is not working and you ask them why, what did you do to it, they say nothing. But what they are really good at is knowing that when it was still working. It's kind of because they know or they believe it's your fault anyway, so they want to tell you that like last Thursday it was working fine before you broke it. So you can actually go back and check what happened on that day. It has driver installations, hardware installation, it has software installations, hot fixes, stuff like that. And as you can see, I have I got a display adapter from a certain company starting with an I, which is stopped working a lot. So that might be something to check for a new driver for. Two cool tools. MSConfig, use a lot. MSConfig is for doing partial safe modes or actually just taking your computer to a safe mode. Why would you put your computer to safe mode with this? Two reasons. One is you can do a selective boot, so you can only choose to disable some of the services. And the other one is that you can do it remotely. So it's perfect for remoting into someone else's computer and remotely getting into safe mode. There's no pressing F8 remotely. There's no pressing F8 in Windows 8 anyway. So MSConfig comes into play. MSConfig can also be good if you're trying to figure out what your computer is, why your computer is not working, because usually Windows does work if it doesn't have any external components to it. So you can just go here, hide all Microsoft services, and start to wonder if these are causing it. I always start there. I have to admit to Microsoft that Windows without anything running on it is quite stable. Okay, there's an even better one called AutoRuns, which you probably know, but I'll show you a few tricks. So what I'll use it for a lot, few things. First of all, if you know you have a computer, and my clients never have admin rights on their computers, so if they've got a malware infection on their computer, it's probably inside their profile. So you can go into the computer with your own clean profile, and you can just choose user and choose whose automatically running stuff you want to see. Perfect for that. And then there's an option of filter options and hide Microsoft entries. And then do a rescan. And that does a better job than MSConfig, because it states everything outside of Windows. So not only services, but everything else starting up. There's a bit more than Microsoft MSConfig says, but that's a really, really cool tool. You always have a few tools you add. You've got sysinternals tools. You've got a Windows Performance Toolkit, which is nowadays part of ADK. And then you have Message Analyzer. And you always need to be able to boot up an unbootable machine, which means that you have to build up on Windows RE. So Windows RE, Windows Recovery Environment. Go to search, create a restore, or sorry, create a recovery drive, create it on a USB stick. You should be always carrying one if you're running Windows 8.1. So that's the only way to boot it into, for example, safe mode if your computer is unresponsive. If you want to change your WinRE image, check what it is on your hard drive. There's a few commands just for your, for reference. Tools we kind of already checked out. I'm always getting ahead of my demo slides, it seems. Performance troubleshooting. Few things. If you are struggling against slowness, there are two things I always do. First of all, change the group policy setting of displaying highly detailed status messages. If you went to Jeremy's absolutely great talk yesterday, you've seen it there as well. It was in Windows 7, it was still named normal versus verbose messages. It's the same registry key, but it's so logical to just change the name in every Windows. And another one I always do is that since Windows 7, normal users have not been able to get GPO reporting. So if you're just a limited user, you can only get a GPO report of your user settings, not the computer settings. So you have to change this. You have to add authenticated users the right to read group policy results data. Then it goes back to the way it was in XP, and you can actually get helpful reports for your help desk. You have to have the ability to log on without the logon. So that's the coolest thing in Windows, which is usually, probably many of you see this used for cracking, but I use it for good purposes. And having fun with my friends. For Windows, for Microsoft's own support personnel, they left in a cool thing into Windows, which allows them to run a debugger without the customer knowing it. So what we'll do is we'll go here, Microsoft, Windows NT, current version, image file execution options. And all what you can do is you can create any key. You create the key with the name of the executable you want to replace. This is more powerful than any path variables or anything, so Windows always checks this first. So for example, if I would like to have fun with my friends, whenever they try to open up Notepad, I would actually want them to be running a debugger with the value of calculator.exe. Okay? So now wherever you go, you get Notepad, and you actually... Oh, it was already open. Sorry. Let's close that down. So you go here, Notepad, and you get the calculator. That's nice for your friends, do you think? You could go, like, you have to go to C, Windows, System 32, Notepad, right click, and then we go open, and we get the calculator. So let's use it for something else. So what we'll do is we'll figure out some kind of a process that is running on Windows before anyone logs on. So we'll change Notepad for this example. We'll use display switch.exe, which is the one whenever you press Windows P, it gives you the decision of projecting your screen. But on my computer, if I now press Windows P, I actually get a calculator. That's new, cool way of getting a calculator. Now let's change that to cmd.exe. So now whenever I press Windows P, I get the command prompt. And whenever my computer is locked and no one has logged on, I press Windows P and I get the command prompt with system rights. Thank you. So for example, now you are able to troubleshoot your slow logons. You're able to troubleshoot your machine when no one has logged on. It's just more of a concept that you have to know. Looks kind of weird. What I suggest you don't do is explorer.exe from here, because then you are actually running the whole Windows Explorer with system writes. And that's the most dangerous thing you can do for a Windows machine. And go and open IE. Okay, let's log back on. See, Process Explorer has hanged. Let's talk to Mark about that one. Okay, slowness is often caused by policies, so you have to be able to play around with policies, meaning that you have to be able to get rid of policies to test it out, and sometimes you have to be able to disobey your company's policies. Don't use this for, as Mark Minassi would say, don't use this for bad. Don't use it for evil. So to use it for good, what I mean here is that some policies still get tattooed on a Windows 8.1 machine, meaning that you will, although you put your computer account and user account to an organizational unit that doesn't get any policies, there will still be security policies on the computer. So you have to get rid of those as well. So whenever you try this out, you put it into an organizational unit that has blocked all policies, and then you run this secedit configure. Configure. It'll restore Windows to its original state. So then you can actually know if it's because of policies. I just had a case with a customer that they were struggling with non-working Windows, actually Windows 7 machines, and it was because of certificates, because a certificate had been, or a certificate was expired. But they thought it was not because of policies. They told me that they've tested it already. But when you go and take out the policies from the computer, it doesn't touch the PKI settings. So you have to run that first, and then you can say, well, it is because of policies. And then we knew that the policies were taking the certificates to the computer, and those were already too old. And you can bypass some policies. This is something that my company totally hates me for showing everyone. I love doing it. I remember Mark doing it this on his talk when he had just joined Microsoft. So I think it's totally cool for troubleshooting as well, not only to disobeying policies. It's also a perfect example of why your end users cannot have admin rights for their local computers. So there's no way of controlling local administrators. This one, my computer, let's go and check out sysdm.cpl, which is system properties, and go remote. And here you can see something has been grayed out. That's the funniest thing that I hear sysadmins say. Group policies gray things out. There's nothing to do with group policies that it's grayed out. It's grayed out because of a setting being in a certain place in the registry. Policy did put it there, but it has nothing to do with group policies. But when I take the group policy settings reference file from Microsoft's website, I can find what this registry file is. I mean, registry setting is. So it's set in the Excel. Every single group policy setting comes with a registry hive, a registry key. So I check it from there, and then what I'll simply do is I'll go to regedit, and let's find it. So it's HK local machine, software, policies, Microsoft, Windows NT, terminal services, FDNI, TS connections, and we'll just delete that one. Yes, like that. And then we'll go here, and then we'll go here, and then we go here. So if you have admin rights, you can always take out the policies. That's why admins cannot be administered with group policies. Limited users can, but admins don't. Admins not. And that's very good because sometimes it's caused by policies, so you have to know how to get rid of policies. If you would have to get rid of policies totally, then the easiest way would by far be to go here and just use what you know. So go here to policies, permissions, Mrs. System, deny. Then you won't have any policies. Because Windows, there's a few other registry hives to go through, but basically Windows works in a way that if you cannot read the rules, you don't have to obey them. It If you think it's still about policies, then you check logs. If it's not logs, if you can't find anything in the logs, then you go and get the Windows Performance Toolkit. Just a few examples of my own cases. Below here, there's an example on the left with the log on taking about 400 seconds. And then after taking out a single malperforming log on script, we get down to 180. That's an old one, 2012. This is a brand new one with a single service. The WinLogon init phase of Windows boot up is taking up huge amounts of time, 333 seconds. Out of that, a single service has service init time, 213 seconds. Take that service out, and we get down to about 100 seconds. It might look a bit intimidating, but it's not that bad. So really want you to go and try it. Final thing, we only have a few minutes left. So finally, we have some network troubleshooting news, which are great. So just to wrap things up, first of all, Direct Access Client Troubleshooting Tool has been out for a few months. A really, really good tool for Windows 8.1, Windows 7 Direct Access environments. If you haven't downloaded it, please do. There's also one other cool thing. It's amazing how many talks I've heard here, people talking about Network Monitor. Download Network Monitor, do Network Monitor, that this. Still, it's already replaced by Message Analyzer. So there's no new Network Monitor. If you're trying to download a Network Monitor, don't do that. You go and download Message Analyzer. That's the new one. They just changed the name again. What you can do is you can actually remote Network Monitor finally, but only for Windows 8.1 and only for Windows Server 2012 R2. So let's check that one live. I've got a Server 2012 R2 here somewhere. DZ. Let's connect there. Log in. Start Message Analyzer. And then we should have a client here. What do you need from the client side? You actually need to be running WinRM, meaning that you have run WinRM quick config, or you have otherwise enabled PowerShell remoting. That's the only thing you need from the client side. And then you go on the server side, just take a new capture, and you can find it pre-built here. There's a remote link layer to Windows 8.1, Windows Server 2012 R2. Then you go here, there's localhost, change it to a computer name or IP address. Actually, you have to choose that first, and then go here. Then you get the interfaces of what interfaces you want to capture. And that's basically it. Let's start with that. See if there's anything happening. Well, actually, now you can see the connection already. So now we are remotely figuring out what's happening on the network interface of the client. Okay, I've got a few short slides of Windows 8.1. Windows 8.1 doesn't have the ability to press F8. That's because Windows 8.1, most of the computers, at least if you ask Microsoft, will not have a keyboard. So there's no way of pressing F8. Also, with UEFI, you would have the maximum of 200 milliseconds to press F8. So you know that already on your quick SSD machines, you're like trying to get to your F8 menu. So now it's easier. You just shift restart. So shift key, choose restart. That's the easiest way if you have a live machine. That's the same for going to UEFI, if you've been wondering. Or if it's an unbootable machine, then it'll happen automatically. So unsuccessful boot number one. Computer reboots, number two, computer reboots. If it's still not working, it'll boot into Windows RE. It'll ask if you want to go to advanced options, and then it'll reboot to the F8 menu. So kind of many reboots to get into safe mode on Windows 8.1. All right. That's the one I was looking for. So that's what it looks like. If you have a machine, you cannot boot at all. So you're, for example, losing boot manager totally. Or you are losing, you have lost your PCD store totally. Then you will have to use Windows RE from an external media. That's why I told you, you have to create one for you. Sorry, I was actually trying to stop a bit too long, sorry. Whenever you have 10 seconds time, you try to get to the last one. Yeah, sorry. We're right on time. Everyone, few words. The track resources, stuff we don't care, but the one thing, if you want to have and see the Finn fly back to US again, I desperately need evals. So please fill in the evals, and I'll tweet out it as well, so you can find the link there. I really, really hope you do it. And now for the baseball caps for email addresses and cards. Thank you, everyone.